Okay, so the guest speaker did not give me an introduction to say, unless he's going to tell me what it is now.
No, this is a seat of the pants type situation.
Well, isn't all of this a seat of the pants type situation here? But how many already know Craig Perrine? Yeah, some of you already know who he is. He's already got his own name and own following on the internet. He is a dear friend. His wife is Amy, sitting back there talking to Pat. I know his entire family. I actually performed magic for their one son and all of the neighbors one day. It was the only children's magic show I've ever done, but I did it for them. So that was a historic moment. And we became, now we're deep best friends. I love the guy. I love his entire family. When he first came to me, it was because he was interviewing me for a teleseminar he was doing for Nitro Marketing. And it turned out to be a breakthrough. In fact, I think it's called the breakthrough interview. And he had come to the house, and we've become fast friends. And now I also rely on him for a lot of bouncing off of ideas. And he's one of the few people that's on the same wavelength in terms of marketing and spirituality. While Craig can stand up and talk on his own all day long, literally, about marketing, about list building, about building relationships with email, he also knows the behind-the-scenes energy level that we've been coming from and we've been addressing. He also knows that if you don't handle the beliefs, that you could sabotage yourself, that if you don't pay attention to the passion that propels you to go forward, that you may not get the results you want. That actually, in the reality that I'm coming from, the email, the list building, the marketing, all of that is nowhere near as important as where you are coming from when you institute, when you implement all of that. Craig knows about that. One of the few people that he and I can have that kind of a conversation. And we did yesterday at lunch, yesterday evening. That's the kind of caliber of conversation we're having. So what I'd like to do is invite Craig to come up and to speak about all of this. Give him a warm...
Let's keep the clapping going, because I think Joe really needs to hear it. This is amazing. Well, many of you do know that I speak on email marketing and list building most of the time, and so this was an interesting thing to do this event and to know that I'm going to be speaking probably on something completely different, and on top of that, to not know exactly what I was going to say. I wanted to stick with the spirit of the event, and so this is all I have. There's no PowerPoint. And I thought I'd tell you a little bit about myself, because I think that I have lived a life that is a series of unlikely events strung together. And a lot of it has had to do with manifesting things. I went through some very dark times, especially as a teenager, where I seemed to do manifestation in reverse, or at least the reverse of what I wanted. And how many people here are entrepreneurs or would like to be? Okay, I think that's unanimous. All right. And that's basically been my life. I've been an entrepreneur since the age of 16 in one way or the other, and I've supported myself since about the age of 22, 23 with information products, except for a few dark years where I joined the dot-com frenzy for a while. Anybody here participate in the dot-com thing? We all hang our heads. So I've learned a few things about how I've lived my life, and I think that's one of the reasons that you know, Joe and I become friends, because like you said, we do relate on this other area of spirituality and how things really work. And I think most of the successful folks that I've met in marketing, that's where I know some of the names that you'll recognize. And, you know, privately, most will admit some form of belief system like what we're talking about here today. They may have different labels. They may say, you know, well, you know, by the blessings from God or something like that. They'll have their own language for this other power that we're talking about. And sometimes they'll be very reserved about saying anything from stage about what they really believe. But what does that leave you with when you're learning how-to information about marketing, for example? If nobody talks about this whole other thing that really is a part of our process, but we don't talk about it, right? And I'm just one of those same people. I don't talk a lot about this on my blog, which is Maverick Marketer. I talk about marketing and some family, social issues, that kind of stuff, but not so much about, you know, the whiteboard. You know, I've never mentioned that, which is, you know, fairly new for me. but I intuitively really, really get it, really like it. So what I want to talk about here today is how you can apply this to your business. Would that be interesting to you? Okay. Because I really love the material, and from a personal growth point of view, I think this is the cutting edge of anything I've ever heard in terms of getting clear and getting to what you should be doing. But my mind just started spinning. I'm like, well, how does that apply to your business? You know, and so anybody would like to share, going around the room, kind of what you would like to do, what you would really love to do tomorrow, Monday, when you get back in your office or your job, whatever you're doing. What would you really love to do based on what you've experienced here this weekend? It may be different from what you're doing right now. That's just kind of especially what I'd like to hear. Something that would be a stretch for you, something that would be really different. Anybody want to share?
I've been trying to think of a language, and I haven't figured it out yet, but I will.
Mm-hmm.
I know that, because I'm going to work at it.
That's great. And, you know, that actually is something I wanted to talk to you about. That's what I love about this format. You know, that's right on one of my things here, is essentially what happens when you are around other people that don't necessarily get what we've experienced here, right? First time I went through that was when I was 15. I went to a camp called Super Camp. And I met Tony Robbins, actually, at the age of 15. And I credit that experience with teaching me about, you know, anything is possible. And I went back to my teenage friends, you know, all drinking beer and throwing bottles down the stairs and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And they're like, right, you know, what's up with you? Did you hit your head over the weekend, pal? Smoke too many bong hits, right? And so that issue of how do you bring this out to the real world, to your business, to your customers, and yet you know that you had to go through a weekend or perhaps a longer journey to get where you are. You can't necessarily just dump that as a parcel on somebody and say, here, open it, you'll love it, you know. They may need to have a bit more of a warming up to some of these ideas, because it does fly in the face of everything that we've traditionally been taught. So anybody else would like to share what you'd love to do Monday morning with your business, applying some of this that you've learned this weekend? Okay, be nice.
I'm always nice. I'm actually going to stay here another day, so that's what I'm going to do with my business on Monday morning. Great place. But Tuesday, one of the things I've written down to do, not in the magic journal because we can't share any of that, but in the non-magic journal that is still magical, I've written down to start releasing a few things personally. I think the term is cleaning, what we've been using. And a couple of things that really came to the forefront in conversations I've had with other people and listening to Joe yesterday. And it's pretty major stuff. And so it's more of a personal thing that will affect everything I do business-wise. So it's not so much as exactly what I'm going to apply to my business. I know it's not exactly what you're asking, but still it's profound for me. So.
Well, that's important.
Mine's a little bit different because I've done lots and lots of clearing, but the one thing that's interesting is I need to go back and look at the things that I put together, and I need to get in touch with the divine, and what is that? You get to choose but not decide, but there's a letting go and a trusting and a listening that I need to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that I find fascinating is, and this is something I'm currently going through myself, you have certain gifts, and Rita, we talked about this. You have certain strengths, let's say, that you're things you're naturally good at. Now, how many people here would say that that is what you're already doing primarily in your business, that you're playing to your strengths, that that is what you do, you're good at it, you love it? How many people here can really say that? That's good. So there are some folks here that would say, geez, if I could change a few things, you know, I'd be happier with what I'm doing. So the question is, what would be in the way of doing that? You know, what would block you from taking this and applying it right to your business? And write down any objections that you have. You don't need to share that in front of everybody. But whatever would be really fun that you would absolutely love to do for the rest of your, you know, current business on Monday morning, what is blocking you from doing that? What objection pops to your mind? What could be a problem? Just write it down. Anybody want to share one?
Popped out much faster than I thought. Trusting my own wisdom, because I have an idea, a whole business plan, all kinds of stuff, and I've been dancing around the edges of it. And I could, if I just sat down, dove in, I could come up with a pretty thorough strategy, list of short-term and long-term tactics and everything, if I just trust in myself that I already have all that I need, I don't have to consult 50 marketing books. I can do it right now on my own. That's the thing.
Excellent. All right. Thank you. Thank you. That is so true with marketing. Joe and I were talking about this, that, you know, in teaching how to for marketing, I think one of the side effects of that is that people get very focused on, well, I don't know how to do this step yet, so I can't do anything yet. Whereas in point of fact, what we're learning here this weekend is that you probably already have absorbed, and I'll talk a little bit about that a little later, but I'll just say it right now. The thing that I've found, especially in information publishing, okay, when you are creating information to teach somebody about something, positioning yourself as an expert, one of the biggest things, and Joe talked, we talked about this in our first interview together, is people think that they are their conscious mind. They think that their capabilities are what they're consciously aware of. So you are an expert as far as you're willing to think consciously about what you can identify as reasons why you're an expert. But the fact is that when you go to create something, right, and we were talking about this, when you go to write, like fiction or your copy or whatever you're doing, the sum total of your entire being and the divine comes into play. So you never really know what you're going to get until you actually do it. And so that whole, this is a big issue for folks who create information, which is a big part of the internet and kind of where we're going. So it's a big issue that your inventory, your business, is highly dependent on this ability to draw out what you really know and get it. And I will say, from the first thing that I took from Dr. Len's dinner was, let's say I'm in the business to teach people how to do email marketing. Right? If someone out there is struggling in their business, perhaps even on the edge of failing because they don't know how to work with their email, with the list, and actually get revenue, aren't I kind of responsible for them to know it, if I know it? So, why don't you say what you're going to say?
This dovetails with trusting, but it take action. I've been lollygagging, and I need to, one thing that I'm taking away from this is I need to take massive action and to trust that the universe will provide all the hows.
Mm-hmm. One of the things about at what you call lollygagging is procrastination. Would that be another word for that? One of the things that I find, this has been true for me and it's been true for some of my coaching clients, that wanting to get, and this may actually be what you're talking about too, is that wanting everything to be perfect before you make that next step is incredibly limiting. Because how many people here are perfect and willing to admit it? Thank you, Pat. Thank you. I appreciate that. Good share. But one of the things I love about marketing, when someone says, you know, hey, this product has, it's good for this, but don't do it, don't get it if you want that, because it's really not meant for that, right? And they'll reveal some sort of flaw about the product. And then you say, wow, you know, I can identify with that because the other ads that say our stuff is perfect, right? You know it's not true because our existence has the positive and the negative in it, right? There is no such thing as perfect. So when someone either waits for something to be perfect before taking action or holds themselves out to be perfect, don't you just automatically distrust the offer or the person, or even if it's not conscious, right? But you certainly don't automatically gravitate to that person and say, wow, I don't want to be just like them. They're perfect. I mean, even Superman has kryptonite, right? You know? And Joe, right? What was the first thing you said? What was the first thing he said, though? Right? That he said about the manual that he created it really just because it was kind of hedging. But isn't that sort of like revealing that he didn't walk up here like, I'm the guy, and if you don't listen to me, you're a fool, you know? And there are some people, well, he said that to me privately, but, you know. That's the thing, is that if you wait for everything to be perfect, you literally will never do anything because it's not possible. And it's really cruel. Perfectionism is something that I'm kind of on a personal mission to eradicate because, you know, I sent out an ebook once and this will happen. And someone said, now there's a paragraph that doesn't really make sense. There's a couple of typos on the third page. And I thought, right, you know, so what? I'll fix that. But that person's approach to life tells me a lot, where they're looking for the flaw. And I know that if they wrote a book, that they would not send it out because they'd be worried about that typo that they overlooked. And that sort of thing is what really holds people back when they go back Monday morning and they're sitting in front of their usual environment, and the environment of the workshop is in the past then, and they got to try to figure out how to stay in that state where, you know, anything is possible, or to go to the zero state, or even be a witness to what you're doing, often goes right out the window. And, you know, it happens to me all the time where I don't act out of my highest capabilities. I revert to some earlier, you know, behavior. Anybody here relate to that? All right, sweet, I'm not alone. Okay. Anybody here facing a tough choice, you know, between, let's say, taking off on a new direction, publishing a new product, or doing something different than what you're doing now? Anybody here struggling with what to do? Here's something that, when I remember it, it's very helpful to me. It's a feeling-based process, so I think you all relate to it, given what we've been talking about. When I'm faced with a decision where I intellectually can't quite just make a black or white decision, what I somehow picked up to do is to really feel each decision as if I had just made it, all right? Should I go to get a PhD or should I not get a PhD? I struggled with that at one point. I decided not to. I just decided, what would it feel like now that I've decided not to get a PhD? How do I feel? Okay, I've decided to push on and get one anyway. How do I feel? And the fact is that I found that to be a really reliable way to show me what to pick when the intellectual part isn't working. When it's really an emotionally tough issue for you to decide, sometimes the biggest decisions are like this. I just put it in the future as if I had already made that decision and see how it feels. And very often, I will feel pretty uncomfortable with one of them. Not in a, hey, I need to try this kind of way, but like, ew, that's not good. That doesn't feel right. And then I know what to do. So I also really relate to Joe's mission in terms of, if you're scared of it, you kind of have to do it. I don't know where I picked that up. It may even have been from Joe. But again, when I remember to do it, it's a very powerful thing. So one of the things I also want to encourage you to look at is, let's say that you are lollygagging or you're worried about the outline of things and not sure if you can trust yourself and all that sort of thing. It's real tempting to kind of beat up on yourself for that. Anybody here do that? You know, talk trash to yourself and you're your worst own enemy, that kind of thing. Entrepreneurs all do that, I've found, pretty much. I think people do that. And so the question is, what are your, what I call your default settings? Okay, you have certain things about you right now that are just kind of how you've always been, or they were because of your early conditions, right? Let's say you were born in a desert. I'll make this really simple. Wouldn't you believe sort of that water was scarce? So maybe even 40 years later, you might always be obsessed with water, right? Well, look at some of your obsessions. Look at some of your fears. And I really like Joe's approach to essentially not trying to overanalyze them or figure out, you know, why down to the last detail or blame anybody for what they are. But I do think it's important to be aware of what they are. So what you can do is I would write this down. Whatever your current obstacle is, your block that you just wrote down, I want you to take a quick look at where that might be coming from, okay? Because it's probably not a temporary thing. It's probably one of your kind of your default settings. It's kind of how you go about things. You know, if you're lollygagging, for example, not to pick on you, but if that's what you're doing, that's probably not the first time you've done that. I really wish I could attribute this to whoever taught it to me, but whenever you hear yourself saying right now, you're probably lying to yourself. Like, I'm blocked right now by this because... And it seems like it's a temporary thing. But the problem is, it's probably something you need to actually break through. That it's not a temporary thing. It's not a situation that's going to go away. It's actually a pattern of yours. And it will repeat. So let's take needing other people's validation before you take action. Okay, that's what he was talking about. Well, you could say, right now, for this project, I need other people's validation before I can move forward. But it's probably something that has been present in every project you've ever done. Anybody see any patterns like that in their lives? Well, the neat thing about those patterns is that I call them your default settings. It's kind of what you started with, and they're unavoidable, so there's no need to kick yourself or blame or anything like that. It's just how it is. Nobody's perfect, neither were your parents or your school ground, playground, and all that sort of thing. You just were dropped in the environment you were, and that's where you got most of what your beliefs and attitudes are. All you really got to do is become aware of them, and then acknowledge them and do the exercise we're talking about here. It's the best thing I've ever seen for what to do next. But you can reverse engineer yourself from whatever your current problem or block is back to where it came from. And then once you're aware of it, you say, well, geez, I grew up in the desert. That's why I think water is scarce. Of course, you could substitute money for water, right? Say you grew up in a broke household, you might think that money is scarce. Or maybe there's a lot of turbulence in your life, so you crave security. Maybe you had a very critical person in your life, and so you stall before taking action because you're really afraid for the smackdown of telling you that you did it all wrong, right? These are the things, in my experience, that really keep people from launching that next project, from sending out that email to promote something. This is how it affects your business, because these are the inner game type things that are going on in your head when you're facing that next step that you might be afraid to take. And one of the things, I mean, I certainly never had any formal training on this stuff, and I just think one of the things that I picked up from my father that has allowed me to charge ahead and do crazy things is he demonstrated that it'll work out. You know, you can take that jump and it'll work out. I don't know, there's just been a ton of different variations on how he demonstrated that. And, you know, I've used that to my detriment at times. But the point is, there's another way of looking at things, that they won't work out, that life sucks, that I'm a martyr, you know. That's another setting that is really debilitating because it'll prevent you from doing anything, right? So just take a look at how you approach things when you see something. Do you think this will work and just go for it? Or, like with what we're talking about here, do you worry about the how-to stuff, you know, and get bogged down?
It seems to be like a fundamental set of opposing approaches here that maybe other people are seeing or maybe not. One is the new idea that we heard yesterday, that it's a matter of just connecting with the source and sort of, you know, although you can repeat it as a mantra, it's a very simplified, like a generic setting, if you will. And then the other approach would be, which I've heard from many other sources, is, you know, having specific affirmations and bombarding oneself with those. My sense is that the two are not mutually exclusive. And I'm curious how other folks feel about that.
Well, I can give you my feedback on that. One of the things I noticed when we were talking about, for example, whether you're coming from ego or whether it's divine, you noticed we all had some different answers there, right? But wouldn't you say there was some truth to pretty much all the answers? There's an analogy that I found very useful, and that is that if there's a bunch of people looking at an elephant, they're all going to see their own part of the elephant, and that's going to be their reality, okay? But it's really just based on kind of the view of their taking of the same thing. It's still an elephant. So to allow complete trust in, let's say, it's sort of a blank slate approach as opposed to relying on specific affirmations, there's a bit more trust involved and just throwing it all to the blank slate and saying, hey, it's going to work out. I don't need to tell myself exactly what I need to improve or what the mantra needs to be. I'm just going to trust the overall divinity in that. So it's kind of the same idea. It's just taking it, I think, to another level. Anybody agree or think that's crazy? Right. Yeah, I mean, it's just sort of like, it's like a blank check is the way I look at it. You're saying, okay, I'm not going to request exactly, it's like what Joe was saying, you know, you may think you know what your problem is, like the little exercise I just told you about. That may not actually be your biggest problem. This may be the one that you're currently aware of. It's your current view of the elephant. But when you trust to the entire process and to say, okay, I'm just going to go with whatever the divinity brings out, then you have less of a conscious control, and that may be uncomfortable, more uncomfortable, but it may also be more powerful. And the marketer's answer to everything is, test it, right? Let's talk about how this applies to your actual business. I've said I would do that. Who here has a list of subscribers or customers? Okay, who here would like one? Okay. this stuff we've been talking about this weekend has some interesting implications for that. And in fact, you were talking about Joe's email that got you here and how most other emails are, you know, the same and, in fact, kind of turning you off at this point. And I can relate to that because when I'm writing my best emails, they're not a formula. They're not like what other people are writing. They're just what I want to say at the moment. In fact, I was admitting to Joe that, like, the different formulas, like, anybody hear of ADA and some of the other standard formulas, attention, interest, desire, action, whatever? I hate formulas, you know, in a real gut level. I just don't like following them. And when I try to, my writing is weak because I'm so focused on the how-to and the structure that I lose the inspiration. Okay. Well, the key to having a list and being able to send emails, this is pretty cutting edge for me because there are some general formulas you can follow. If you do want to get their attention in the subject line, you do want to have an interesting email and have a call to action at some point, right? There are some basics that are good to know. But one of the things I've taken away from this weekend as an email marketing guy is that you probably will write much more effective emails if you simply have a dialogue with your subscribers from your inspiration. You know, like what Joe said, just put it on the line. All right, I have been inspired to put on an event. I'm not going to tell you a damn thing about it. I'll just tell you the price and how to order. Okay? And that was part of the inspiration, was to just have it be a real minimalist type of thing. And so, really, you're all sitting here as living proof that the connection from Joe to you, from one to many, is really one to one. And you chose to come based on what you got from that email. And that is a real example for how all of your emails can be. But most people create their marketing from a position of formula, or they focus strictly on the features in the worst case, or on the benefits, sort of a next better level. But what they leave out is the personality. What they leave out is, you know, any sort of humor or divine sort of inspiration. So I wish I could give you a formula for this, except that if you can get to that place where you're just clear and then you just write whatever pops out, I bet that you'll not only be able to get more subscribers on your list, you'll also be able to really connect with them. So that if you have an ebook that you want to launch and you want to tell them about, or if you have an event or if you have a promotion that you're doing, they'll be paying attention. Now, one of the feedback that I get from my subscribers is that I'm one of the few emails that they still continue to read. And that's, I know how powerful that is because your inbox is probably the most competitive real estate in marketing. I mean, that's hard to get into and it's hard to stay at the top of the list, right? Because what? It's digital, you know? You can get an unlimited number of emails to compete with yours. And most of it's junk and people get annoyed. They're tired of it. So the only way around that is to be yourself. All right? To take what you've learned here this weekend and be inspired. That's why I started with, you know, what would you really love to do? Because the odds are you're going to have an email or a sales letter or a website or even a direct mail postcard or something that you're going to be advertising your business, right? I mean, we all need to advertise. So don't get caught up in the email part of it if email's not a part of your business. But you still want to create your marketing messages from this inspiration, wouldn't you think? What would happen if your next message said, you know, hey, this is how I, and I can't tell you what it's going to say because you'll be inspired in that moment. So there's, again, there's a trust thing that comes up. It's like, well, I don't know what to say. I'll just start saying it and see what happens. That may be sort of the cutting edge formula I can give you, is that whatever like Joe talks about this, he doesn't promote anything he's not excited about. Are you excited about what you're going to be telling your customers Monday morning? If you're not, I would suggest that you're going to have a hard time being inspired.
What comes to mind is Picasso. If he started out as an abstract expressionist, he would not be Picasso. And yes, I agree with everything you said. But the fact that you and Joe can write just, you know, soul-based, intuitive communications is based on, you have some serious writing chops to base that on. in the early days, Picasso was a naturalistic painter. He painted like precise, like picturesque images. And so, yes, it's everything you said, but at the same time, having at least a partner who is highly structural, who can like at least edit your work and do a reality check, I think would be advised.
Well, test it.
No, I agree with you on some levels, but there is also a risk to what you're saying that may be greater than sending something out that is unedited. The greater risk is that you'll end up neutering it, and it won't have the power that the spontaneity would have. And you don't have to have any natural talent, really, to be yourself, right? And what happens with the list, I mean, here's, in my, as a marketer, as an email marketer, the reason you're all here is because you were highly motivated to be here. Because the selling job certainly wasn't overwhelming. Okay? I don't mean that as a criticism. I'm saying, was... But was there a lot of push? Was there a lot of, you know, tugging at your heartstrings? No. Right? You're here because you were primed to be here. You were ready. This is the right thing for you to do. All right? Well, so, if you build a list of people, and you're being yourself, and you're communicating something of value to them, they're going to subscribe, and they're going to listen to what you have to say. And the fact is, people who are not like you, or who just can't deal with you, won't stay subscribed. Well, and they may not even be people that don't like you. The fact is, who here has heard of Howard Stern? I won't make you raise your hand if you like him or dislike him. But an interesting study was done, and I think most people will agree, whether you're a fan or not, that he can be highly abrasive. Okay? Howard Stern. The fact is, though, that people that don't like his show listen twice as long as the ones who do like it. So, the main thing is you just have to let your personality out, or people aren't going to know that that is your personality. And they'll kind of like two ships in the night, they'll pass you by, and you may only have one shot to connect with them. But if you are being yourself, what happens then? They feel like they know you, right? And then when you say, hey, come to a weekend, I'm doing this crazy event, because they know you, they'll show up. But if you've hidden yourself behind crafty editing and it looks like Madison Avenue, you're going to be just like everything else on the TV and you won't be trusted. Because here's the thing, if there's one thing I can share with you about marketing in today's age, is that people crave reality. They do not like pre-processed people. They don't like the cheese whiz of people, because that's what you get on CNN, right? Anybody there have imperfect hair? No? They all kind of look the same. Barbie and Ken, that's who you get on the news. So guess what? People don't trust that, though. We accept it. We're more or less aware of it. But when someone writes to you and says, hey, I just had this crazy idea, that sounds like someone you know. That sounds like someone you trust. And the New York Times did a crazy poll at one point that determined that a vast majority of people, like 85%, believe that if they know someone, then they're going to be okay. But a huge majority of people feel that if they don't know somebody, that they're likely to get screwed over. Just very basic human behavior. So if you write from your inspiration and you are communicating honestly with people, kind of like reality TV, only not. But that's why people love that stuff, because they're hungry for it.
I have a project coming up. It's how to make $1 million a year using Craig. So be expecting that email, Craig.
Sweet.
One thing that I've read and I completely agree with is that the reality, and we're using the term reality in a real sense of the word, that coming from the heart-based emails that are absolutely who you really are, that works so well, at least, especially for my audience, because everyone out there, or so many people out there, want to be that person. They want to either connect to that person, or they want to be someone that's that open, that brazen, that funny, whatever it may be. And they're going, well, you know, there's a strong pull to that because there's so much plastic in our environment. So I think that's a really powerful. And I just want to give one thing that I did recently that worked really, really well, and it wasn't a plan. I just wrote it, and I doubled a response on a product because I wrote it's a factual statement that there's over 150,000 nutrition books and fitness books, and that's just an unbelievable number, and that's actually a low end estimate. And I've read every one of them. And I put, oh, I'm just kidding. I haven't read every one of them. And then I even put the obligatory smiley face, which I never do in an email. But, the product's just doubled. I mean, that little joke connected with a lot of people. And I said, well, I haven't read every one of them, but I can pretty much tell you da 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 da, you know. And just a little bit of humor, and I've been known to be extremely, over the top with humor. It does work very well. So, FYI.
I don't believe you.
No. Well, it's true, actually.
Yeah, I just had a question about, because the kind of playing in my mind now is the idea of reach and how this ties into the whiteboard and all that kind of stuff. So if you can, and expanding that reach, not only expanding it exponentially, but in a faster way.
You mean in terms of growing your subscriber list and
active?
Right, and I would even say that if you could have 300 that were active, it would be more valuable than 30,000. As email starts to be a cost for delivery sort of format, you're not going to want 30,000 subscribers unless you have 30,000 buyers, right? It would be like, more like direct mail. What I think here is if you stand out, let's say there's 150,000 direct competitors to what you're doing, which is a reasonable estimate in many, many industries. First of all, there are some miracles going on. Right, when someone sees your ad or sees you on a teleseminar or something like that, at that moment, you're connecting for a reason, most likely. There is that element to marketing, right? You have the right message for them at the right time. But by standing out and writing from an inspired point of view, or even coming up with your next product idea from an inspiration, you're going to stand out all the more. And the thing is, it's kind of like the one light among all the darkness. You really stand out by being yourself, because everybody else, it's like, who mentioned you were talking about the social veneer. Well, there's a marketing veneer of just a layer of BS over everything that's what 99% of the people do. So if you stand out and your marketing isn't like that, if you get in a position for your marketplace to see that, you got to, do some outreach, partner up with some people or pay-per-click or whatever you're doing. The people in your niche are really going to notice you. Or if you write articles, for example, that's a great way, inexpensive way to get your message out. That's a great environment for you to be yourself, too. Right? Just write articles. In fact, you were talking about that, how you've gotten a lot of traction now with more and more articles out there. Yeah, because people don't trust ads as much. Pay-per-click may get you traffic, but the first thing you got to do then is build trust. Because they know they're clicking on an ad. Right? But if they read your article, well, then you're an expert, among other things. And you may have injected some personality and some fun into the article, so then they like you on top of thinking you're an expert. And then all you got to do is deliver on what you promise, and then they trust you too. So the neat thing here is that you have an opportunity by being in this room, and you may not be able to directly communicate things like the whiteboard to your subscribers. You may not be able to say, hey, I really think that if you come from the place of the whiteboard, you're going to buy this ebook. They'll be like, right, and that's fine. You can still come from that place and use whatever words do come out for you. You don't have to explain the how-to of it, but they'll get that you're being on your edge. Okay? One of the things I'll tell you, I've written some emails recently, I haven't said this to anybody else really, that, like, I have a natural writing ability. I've been writing since I was 5, I think. And I can revert back to a rather bland, formulaic sort of thing, without even using half of my inspiration or brain power. I can just write something. And if I'm in a hurry, that's kind of what I end up doing. And so I've noticed my last couple of emails, I'm like, yeah, that's not really my best work, because I didn't take the time to get clear and get inspired and write something else. So I can tell you that it's a process you want to respect and obey, because it won't serve you to move away from that position of inspiration when you're sending your next email. Because the people that you're reaching, like Amy said, she's been on my list for a couple weeks now. She says, well, yeah, I get bored easily, essentially, is what she said. So I'm sitting there thinking, well, my latest emails haven't been that interesting. I only got a couple more days with Amy. Of course, she's going to unsubscribe, right? But isn't that kind of how you feel about, you get a couple of dumb emails from somebody and you may not give them another chance. So the thing about following what Joe's taught you about in terms of promoting things that you're excited about, You know, that's where your reach and your traction is going to grow, because so many people aren't doing that, that they relate to you. I remember once, a year or so ago, I was at a conference and somebody said, you know, I've really missed your newsletter. At the time, I had stopped publishing a particular newsletter. And she didn't know about my new one. She's like, I really miss it. I'm thinking, what newsletter? Literally what I was sending out was a bunch of teleseminars and jokes. I was just being silly and I was promoting stuff. But to her, that was a newsletter. And I realized that it wasn't so much about the content as it was about the connection, the fact that she related to me as a person. And it turned out I actually gave her a major gift that she told me about a year later. But I told her, I said, wow, you know, it seems like you read everything. She's like, yeah. So a year later, she says, you know, I stopped reading everything but pretty much yours and a couple others because I realized I was reading too much and not doing enough. So that's an interesting process, too. But do you see why I started out talking about what would you be excited about for Monday morning? And whatever you wrote down that's blocking you, just scratch that out. You don't want that. Just go do it anyway. Because that's where you're going to find that the business side of what you're coming here to learn is that the inspiration is the key. And I've looked at it from the point of view of, you know, being yourself. I'm using two microphones. Is that stereo or what? I really want you to get this. you have a choice. I mean, you can go home and play it safe. You know, you can write an email. Like, most people get their email marketing training from what they see in their inbox. They go, okay, that's email marketing. Oh, bad idea, you know, because most of it's crap, you know. So if you copy that, then you're going to get what you were talking about, where, you know, if Joe had sent out one of those emails, you wouldn't be here, right? So it's really that simple. It's a little edgy, though, to be yourself, because email is like today's personal letter. You know? Some person you know is going to get that. And if they unsubscribe or write you back and say that you're, you know, crazy or something like that, it'll probably hurt your feelings, right, even if you don't want it to. Right? So it's personal. So being yourself has all the same risks as being open in your relationships. But it works. Being yourself definitely works. And one of the things that I find has been very crucial to my success, and it's something that I constantly bump up against, is to take that next step, to do whatever you need to do, is by definition going to make you uncomfortable. It has to, if it's something worthwhile to do. Because otherwise, it's not truly a step forward, is it? Right? If you're comfortable with whatever you're doing next, the odds are you're not stretching enough. Because, by definition, it's comfortable. What's unknown, what's different, what's new is uncomfortable. It has to be. So if you're completely comfortable with the emails or the marketing or whatever you're doing in your business, your next product idea, if you're totally comfortable with it, it's probably not that exciting. Now, I'm not saying don't do it just because of that, but maybe you could tweak it a little bit and ask yourself, how could it be better? Yes.
As far as the emails that might hurt, I got an email from someone on my list who objected violently to pitch for Mark Joyner's book. And so when I just read the subject line, I didn't open it. I just said, I love you. I'm sorry. That was fine.
Yeah, that's great advice. I actually got an email last night, too, from a crazy guy. Think of this as a JV approach, Joe. The guy writes, it was just a return of my subject line. He was replying to my promotion of Mark's book. He said, you know, if you'd bother to reply to my emails, you'd know that I have a really great product, and I'm just trying to, you know, market it. And he said something else about, you know, pulling money out of trolls or something like that. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about, you know? So I wrote him back. I actually did. I said, you know, I felt like writing you back because if you'd bother to learn how to write communication, you know, politely, then somebody might respond to you. But I said, look, you know, it's very possible that I did, in fact, overlook your previous emails, but just so you know, don't approach JV partners like that because it's not very effective. Although I did reply. But you do get that, but, you know, the power that you get from being able to choose. Like, there have been people that have written me crazy stuff like what you said, and I just go in and unsubscribe them, and in some cases block them from ever subscribing again. And that's your power, right? You have the right to run your business and to be on, you know, if you were inspired to promote Mark's book, then that person just wasn't a good fit for you.
You said you can just go unsubscribe. You don't know how hard that is for me to do. That's my block is technology.
Yeah. Well, that's true, and we can talk about that offline. But there certainly is, you know, for all the discomfort you can get by being, you know, kind of edgy or being yourself, know that there are some safety zones you can go to and just say, look, I don't, like, certainly the exercise itself is, that was the first and best thing to do now that we've, you know, come through this weekend. But the main thing is just, if it is scary, right? Because who here would really love to have something that they're really excited about and have somebody just jump all over you when you promote it? You know, would that feel good? So, but the fact is, this is a great thing for business. This is what I'm talking about. How do you apply what you're learning to what you're really going to encounter in your business day-to-day existence? Because you're going to run into those people. You're going to have a fear about creating that next product or, you know, about approaching some JV partner or whatever it is that you're doing. By the way, JV is joint venture. I know I use a lot of jargon sometimes. But I find this has been a very valuable weekend for me because it's reminded me to turn up that edge in my own business and get back to writing purely from inspiration. And not only that, but next time I record an audio, you know, Joe and I were talking about this, I really don't like doing too much outlining and scripting everything I want to say. It kind of, it messes with my natural process. So guess what? I'm not going to do it anymore. So come hell or high water, I'm not going to do it. And people may not like the product anymore, but that would just be my message back from the universe to do something different. But I believe that it will be better. I believe that whatever I create from this place and any fear that I have about the next promotion, I can probably deal with by saying our new little mantra, right? So, any questions? I don't really have anything more to say other than that. I just wanted to make sure that you, from a business point of view, that I shared how this would look Monday morning and how it can translate.
You were saying about how, well, this is actually a question for you and Joe, but I was just wondering, have you used, when you hit that resistance, like, you know, you don't want to do something. Like, the thing that I would love to do tomorrow has never been done before. That's my block. Like, but nobody's ever done it. So I don't even know where to start or how to make it work or if anybody will buy it. So when that resistance comes up, do you find that that, like, the mantra helps you to just push through and just take action anyway? Have you specifically used it for that?
I personally haven't yet, but I have a similar process. I did this crazy video once, okay? Amy will tell you about it. I put on a Donald Trump wig, and I did my best to dress up in a power suit with the red tie and the white shirt, and did my best Donald Trump imitation. And I stayed up till 4 in the morning doing take after take after take of that video. And I was so tired and so burnt out. At one point, Amy came down to get a snack at like 2 in the morning. She walked in and she says, you have no idea what you've done to your sex life. And I thought, I could take that either way.
You are really good.
That's right. So I sent it out anyway, all right? I sent out the video. Mostly my friends thought it was hilarious, like Michael Fortin said he fell out of his chair. I mean, you know. But other than that, it didn't get a big response. It was kind of like, you know, the tree that fell in the woods that nobody heard. So normally if I have a major, like I really am binding on, I just can't send it out, I'll sleep on it and I'll check it out the next day. But in this case, I didn't. I just said, screw it, I'm sending it, right? And if I could go back, I probably wouldn't have because I think it was kind of dopey. But my point really is that nothing bad happened. Like nobody had done that. In my little group of people, nobody had really impersonated somebody and done some crazy, you know, thing. But nobody cared. I didn't remember who was saying this before. I think it was actually Bruce was talking about when you're talking to somebody, they're pretty much thinking their thoughts about their head and their deal, right? So you could misspeak or whatever, and they might not even notice because they're all about themselves. So when you send out an email, if you do something no one's ever done before, if they don't relate to it, if it just doesn't mean anything to them, it's never been done because it's not a good idea, they won't remember it tomorrow. So you really don't need to fear any amazing mushroom cloud happening over your home because, honestly, everyone is so focused on their own deal, they don't really care. Unless, if it works, if you hit a nerve with it, and they say, wow, this is the best thing I've ever heard of, then you got a hit on your hands. So it's really a win-win situation. You either win or no one notices.
Ted Nicholas is a great direct marketer.
He's in his 70s, but of course he looks like he's 40 or 50, and he's very alert, very witty, a brilliant man. We all idolize the guy. And he once told me that he had tried many things in his life. Many of them had failed. He had gone bankrupt at least twice. It might have been more than that. And he said he learned something from failure. And I never forgot what he said. He said, "Nothing bad happens to you." And it was so liberating. It was so freeing to realize you can take these big risks. You can actually go bankrupt. You can try things that you really believe are going to work and they don't work. And you survive. You do fine. You somehow just keep on going. And nothing bad happens to you. And I think of the times when I wanted my first BMW, the BMW Z3, and most of you probably have heard the story, so I'll just tell you the short version, that I set the intention that I wanted to create the money for it and have it come out of the clear blue sky. And I got the idea to hold the world's first E-class, and it was a high-end E-class where I said, I'll send you 5 emails, one a week for 5 weeks, and for that privilege, I want $1,500 from you. Which, even now as I think about it, was a preposterous thing to ask for. It was so edgy, it was so risky, but I thought, I really want that car. And this is the idea that seemed to be coming to me from inspiration, though I didn't know it at the time. I wouldn't have said those words at the time. It just seemed like, this feels like a good idea. And I remember writing my email, sitting in front of my computer, my finger over the enter key to hit it and send it out, and I thought, what if everybody unsubscribes? And at that point, my list was like 800 names. And again, you don't need very many names to make something work, but I had 800 names and I didn't want to lose them. I certainly didn't want to be flamed. I didn't want to spend the next week getting hate mail from people because I was so audacious to ask for $1,500. So I looked at that and I thought, okay, what if it happens? What if they do unsubscribe? What if they do send me hate mail? I thought, I'll be okay. I can live with it. You know, I'll get past it. Once the dust settles and everything, I'll just learn from it. I asked the better question. What if it works? What if the darn thing works? And I thought, I like that. And that felt really good. So I sent it out, and within 24 hours, I raised something like $22,500. And it was my first E-class. I went on to make a lot of money from those E-classes, taught other people to do E-classes. The Paulies, Tom Pauly and his wife and his daughter, have made $500,000 from teaching E-classes, and all of this from taking a preposterous risk. And keeping in mind that if you fail, nothing bad happens to you.
One of the things I've found, anybody hear the phrase, do what you love and the money will follow? It's good advice for sure. But what I found, I went to a breakthrough copywriting event that David Garfinkel put on. What popped into my head there was, if you do what you fear, the money will follow. You know, it's great to do what you love, and that's certainly same side of the same coin, really, as far as I'm concerned. But you often will fear doing what you love. And that's what nobody usually talks about. They think it's just going to be this one big giant romp through the hayfield. No, it's not. It's going to scare the crap out of you. And you need to do it anyway, though, because, like you said, the worst thing that can happen is whatever you identify as the worst thing. First of all, it almost never happens. You know, from a guy's point of view, I can tell you, back in grade school, going up to the first girl and asking her out was... Now, there's 1,000 different ways that could go wrong as far as I was concerned. My imagination had them all laid out for me before I could even walk up, right? But anybody who's taken a risk where you sent out that first email, whatever you did, bought your first car, went to your first day of college, whatever it was, one thing happened. The day played out one way. And almost never is the worst case scenario. It's certainly never worse. And in any case, the next day you wake up and it's a new day. So you really have very little downside. And in terms of giving you an idea of what I did with that Donald Trump imitation video, I just put in my email, you're not going to believe the crazy video I just did. In fact, my wife said, there's no idea what it's done to my sex life, right? Of course, the spam filters wouldn't let me write sex, so I had to change to love life, but whatever. And so I sent it out. That was the email. Do you see how easy it could be to write an email? You just tell them what's up. This is what I'm doing. This is really what it was. I was sharing that I thought the video was crazy. And it was. But the point is, it didn't do any harm. I'm still here, right? Lava didn't pour in through my office window. I mean, it's all good. It's all good. Are there any other questions? Because I think I just want to leave that idea with you, that this stuff does have a direct impact, not only on your overall life, but on specific projects, specific to-do items you have on your list for your business. And you just have all the power in the world to apply this inspiration to your marketing, to your business, to even the entire direction of what you want to do with your business. And if you go with your strengths and outsource the stuff that you're not good at, you have no obligation to do the stuff you're not good at. Anybody feel like you do? Like you just... I struggle with that myself. It's one of my current problems. And I can tell you, what I'm discovering beyond a shadow of a doubt is, it's just silly to hold on to things that you're not good at. Have someone else do it. Partner, outsource, whatever it takes. And then come from inspiration, and then I really idolize what Joe has done. Because he comes from that, and he's talked about it in different ways and different words since I've known him, about doing things that you're excited about. You know, promote a product if you're excited about it. If you're excited about Mark Joyner's book, then you really have a lot of emotional insulation if someone says that, you know, he hates that book. Who cares? I was inspired to do that. So can you be wrong if you were inspired? If you're divinely inspired, come on now, can you be wrong? Right. Okay. Yes.
I noticed that a lot of people raise their hands as far as wanting to either expand their list or create one. Do you have a few tips that you want to offer the group as far as?
All right. First thing I would say about that is that your subscribers, your potential subscribers, are people. They're just like you. Why do you subscribe to things? Why do you give your name and email address? Because you want to. What made you want to? Something interesting there. It was more interesting than the fear you have about giving out your personal information. All right, it overcame your resistance to actually getting and requesting more email to come to you. Who here wakes up in the morning and wants more email? All right? So the people that you're asking to join your list are just like you, and they want to know that it's worth their time to even pay attention, to even risk getting spammed by you. And so all you really need to do is know what they want. If they want to learn how to be free of fear and they want to grow their business, and maybe you have an idea for that and you have an audio that you can offer them. Because here's the thing. Like everything else, they don't know you and they don't believe you. So what's the first thing you can do? Should you ask them to give you $1,000 to come to a workshop to opt into your list? No. You should give them a very small decision. Give them a decision that they don't really care about to make. And then prove yourself. Offer them something that is incredibly valuable to them and their perception. If you have figured out 7 things that make email marketing easy, and you write a little report about that, and you offer that to people who are interested in email marketing, they're going to opt in. It's not that hard.
This concludes Disc 4. Now please insert Disc 5.